I'm Robert Sickles, and I'm here with Kenda Kiefel, and this is the Cold Open Mini number 35. And today we are looking at part three of Zack Snyder's seven-part version of the Justice League. And this chapter is revealingly, tellingly, overtly, and obviously called Beloved Mother, Beloved Son, in which we deal with beloved mothers and beloved sons. So Kenda, what do you got for me about this one?
Well, I like to call this part the section that will make you never want to eat hot dogs or hamburgers ever again. But this is my absolute favorite section at the same time. I upon rewatch, remembered how this is what gave life to the movie. To me, I absolutely love it. And of course, it's because the focus is on the Flash and Cyborg, who are just two spectacular scene-stealing characters. I think Cyborg is just my absolute favorite. That beloved mother, beloved son, all the feelings are with his story, in my opinion. I love all that it brings out. And I have to also say that this is the slowest of Mo for, especially for the Flash's section, with the car crash and the dog pound or but I think it's the best spent slow-mo as well, considering the different sections. I have a question for you, Robert, but I'd love to hear your overall first, and then I got a little inquiry.
I actually love the special effect of Flash running. I think the way they did it for the whole movie, I think the way they did it is really smart, really clever, and really fun. And then this section underscores the shared issue that all superheroes have everywhere, and it's really serious parental issues. Oftentimes, daddy issues, like with Aquaman, it's both mommy and daddy issues. With Wonder Woman, it's mommy issues, although I think it's important to note that there's an absentee father, right? And then obviously Bruce Wayne with his parents killed in Crime Alley. And then Flash's dad is in prison, and then Cyborg has daddy issues and his mom is dead. Like, these heroes, they're all seemingly motivated by issues of parenting that occurred in their youth. And it really kind of cracks me up. And in particular, I couldn't help but notice how much Cyborg's dad, Silas, sounds like Uncle Ben. And there's that moment when he says, "The burden of this responsibility that will define you and who you choose to be." And it's like, with great power comes great responsibility, right? It just seemed kind of a rehash to it. So I really enjoyed this chapter, and Flash and Cyborg are much more fleshed out in this version. And in particular, Wonder Woman and Superman and Batman and Aquaman aren't, but I guess the assumption is they don't need to be, because we know them and we've seen them and they've had standalone movies prior to this version of the Justice League. So for the most part, I'm okay with that, to get to know these characters much better than we did previously, especially in the first version of Justice League.
Yes, exactly. No, that's a great point. You're right. There's this sort of built-in thing, but I love the way that they're fleshed out. The contrast of the sort of lack of cocky booyahs from Cyborg, he's so much more interesting in this version in my mind, his sort of haunted struggle with everything. And he's just fantastic. But I have to tell you, the daddy issue, mommy issue throughout this movie. We just watched Austin Powers 3 with our kids. They had never seen it. And the song, the rock and roll song, about his absentee Michael Caine father, his missing father, and the song, "Daddy, Daddy wasn't there." We kept singing this through the entire Snyder cut, because that is the spinal cord of the through line, right? Is this daddy stuff. And it is powerful though, and kind of a shortcut to empathy, I suppose, because Disney employs that at a constant rate as well. But can I ask you, just going back to that wonderful introductory scene with the Flash as he's applying for a job, being a normal person, and catching hot dogs out of the air. It's such a gorgeous scene. But I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's probably one of the most contrasted narrative pieces of it to the J.J. Abrams version, in that, am I right in remembering that the Flash fails in that one to save the girl, or does he actually pluck her out of the air in both? Because I might have a false memory of this.
I have no idea, Kenda. Okay. I honestly don't remember, but I will tell you something that stood out about that scene to me that makes it really unusual for this film is it's daylight. An actual, like, somewhat bright daylight rather than just like dark gray, clearly digitized cloudy skies or pouring rain or some version thereof. Like, it's so rare that you see daylight in this. Even that opening section in chapter one, Themyscira is really beautiful in the Wonder Woman movies. It's clear, it's crystalline, it's blue, and it's everything's just so dark. So it was kind of nice to see a little daylight.
Yes, in that you're scene. So right. Such a great point. You're right. We get daylight, then we get snow, which are comparatively optimistic for a Snyder tableau, right? That's a beautiful point. Thank you. I'm pretty sure that is the difference, making some listeners crazy right now, but I had a discussion about this, and I just want to say, I understand that the Snyder cut is the preferred cut, but I do love the idea of watching Barry fail one time and then be awesome after that, because I like the other clues that we get about him being a young superhero, him being an up and comer, and him just wanting friends, which just like is the sweetest every time when Batman shows up and he agrees right away, which is also a great contrast from Cyborg, who struggles with it, right? But no, I just thought that was an interesting, huge difference, because I have to say, and we'll talk about this later, seeing some cracks in the armor is what connects me to a hero of any sort, right? So,
well, he is far and away, like, I really like the Cyborg character as well. He's not warm. Right. He's not a warm fuzzy, even though he shows some humanity at varying points in time through telling looks at his father. Eye to eye contact. But Ezra Miller, his performance as Flash in this, you can't help but think of Tom Holland, right? And the Spider-Man character from the Marvel Universe. And they seem to be like the younger hero, the comic relief, the happy-go-lucky, the aw shucks, in awe, just to be here. You can't help but think of Tom Holland's response to Tony Stark, right? To Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, and compare it to Ezra Miller when Ben Affleck's Batman tries to get him to join the gang, and he's like, I'm in. He doesn't even need to be persuaded. So there is there's real similarity between those characters, and I don't see one as aping the other or anything like that. I just think it's necessary. It's necessary to have that light, so to speak, in the film to counterbalance just the overwhelming darkness.
Exactly. He, as you and I talked a tiny bit before, he's our way in. He's also the only one that we ever see eat or do human things, I feel like, he is so lovable as a screen presence, and also, and you're right, the comic relief, that's a beautiful connection with Tom Holland. Also, just a quick tiny thing, Billy Crudup as his dad is brilliant casting. They look absolutely like the same person to me. But no, fantastic. Also, I love that we see in this section Alfred be such a scientist, even though it's truly like he is just pretending to be a servant because he knows how to make tea. But I like that we see him at work and he makes a Carhartt suit look so gentlemanly, right? But I just think he has such an interesting role in this particular chapter. So
I think so too. He has much more agency in this film than he does the earlier versions of it. Although in the comics, Alfred is definitely a comrade. Right? He helps. He runs the command center in a way that we don't typically see the alpha characters in the movies doing. So anything else?
Last thing is, I love how grumpy Aquaman is. And when he gets the water bubble or the conversation bubble or whatever you want to call it with Amber Heard, the way he, who looks so amazing in these movies, but she is such a excellent casting too, but the way he backs out of the conversation water bubble like the rock star that he is just made me laugh harder the second time. Just his like swagger and his rock and rollness is pretty perfect. Just so,
is he the worst character in this film? Now look, the caveat here is I really like the Aquaman movie. I think it's so fun. It's super dumb, but it's fun to watch. James Wan has a real touch for action sequences. It's like a Technicolor, really interesting, beautiful world. Like, I like Momoa and his portrayal of Aquaman, but it really feels like he's in a different movie.
Yes. Oh, I totally agree. And almost in a weird way, those as beautiful looking as those water sequences are, they kind of halt the action in a strange way, as does his like level of grouchiness. I agree. He is in a different movie, and it almost stops the flow sometimes. And it's kind of distractingly different in pacing and in vibe, right? So I totally agree with that. That's a good point. But no, fantastic section. Just the effect of that coal burning dark side in disguise. I do want to reiterate what a cool effect that is. It's actually one of the more interesting pieces of what otherwise is sort of some flat villainy. So I do want to give a shout out to the coal.
For sure. Well, with that, let's wrap up this version. And our next one will be on Part 4, which is Change Machine. So I'm Robert Sickles for Kenda Kiefel, and this has been The Cold Open number 35.